Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. It is time for our parenting slot. I'm pleased to say David Carey joins us once again. David, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean.
I'm looking for a way to deal with my son's school to get him through confirmation. He's 12 years old and he has ADHD.
Well, unfortunately, insufficient information here. I don't know what particular issues arise from his attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Is he highly impulse ridden? Is he disorganized? Does he inadvertently or advertently interrupt a teacher in the teaching process or with the planning and organization for confirmation? Is he troublesome with other children? I just don't know. Now, all children with ADHD who have been diagnosed and who have had the necessary reports submitted to school are eligible for resource teaching support. Typically, that may take 5 hours per week, and the resource teacher, that's usually a half hour a day, by the way. The resource teacher may or may not help with organizational skills as well as academic achievement, etc. Now, if the young person with ADHD is highly impulsive, has a very low frustration tolerance, is constantly interrupting, and is interfering with the learning process for the teacher and other children, they may be eligible for a special needs assistant at least part of the time to help them. And so those are the kinds of supports that need to be looked after. So what does this parent need to do? Go to school, talk with class teacher, talk with principal, talk with resource teacher, if in fact the boy has been allotted resource hours, and ask to have the educational program fine-tuned. There ought to be, if at all possible, a written individual educational plan for this boy, which specifies exactly how he's going to be helped, who will be helping him, under what circumstances, and when. So there's a lot that can be done to manipulate the process. In the absence of more information, I really can't say more than that, except to guide them towards use the process that exists in our primary schools.
Well, obviously, there's some sort of, she's worried about the, you know, about confirmation, and that intersects somehow with the ADHD. But as you say, there's not much more she can do than you told her in the absence of any more information. Right. Next one is this, quite a long one. I have three girls, aged 21, 13 and 11. My youngest has been acting strange for the last while, moody, hitting and very disagreeable to everyone, myself and her father included. She told me that she didn't want to wear skirts, dresses, etc. anymore, so she's been wearing jeans and t-shirts exclusively. She then wanted to get her hair cut. I agreed to shoulder length, but it's quite a bit shorter. She has now been saying that she's not a girl and is actually a boy. I'm stunned by all of this, as she's always been a very happy child and loved playing with her dolls and teddy bears and dressing up, etc. In my mind, this has always come out of left field. We've tried to bend over backwards for her, but she'll still come out with phrases like, I want to kill myself, and says that she's always felt this way. The last few outings we had, people who mistook her for a boy, and she was grinning from ear to ear. My middle daughter says that she's worried about her sister's mental health, which really worries me even more. My eldest daughter is in college, and she's been buying my youngest boy's clothes against my wishes. She thinks that she knows everything about life, isn't encouraging my youngest. I tried to sit her down with her one night and many, many other times and explain just how worried we are as parents, but she's becoming increasingly hard to talk to. She then hit me with a bombshell that she is in fact asexual. I was floored. I didn't know what it meant and had to look it up. I'm finding it very hard to comprehend, as they have all had safe, happy and privileged upbringings. We're seriously at our wit's end and trying not to tread on any more minefields here. My question is all of this a trend somehow, like a new phase where children are being encouraged to see the gender as somehow fluid? I feel that there is so much more information, way too much perhaps, on the internet, and children are not really growing up as naturally as our generation did. Help would be appreciated in any suggestions on how to understand and act in our very difficult circumstances. We're truly finding it very hard to cope at the moment.
Well, I'm stunned at the form of the question. This is a child who says she wants to kill herself and has always felt that way. This is a child whose behavior has changed radically from its previous manifestation. This is a child whose gender identity is confused by her own words. What does a child have to do before their parent brings them for help? So the questions are the wrong questions.
Yeah.
This issue requires professional consultation. That's number one. Number two, oldest Budinsky daughter needs to be put in her place. She is not the parent. Butt out. Get out of this. We're dealing with it. Don't you buy her any more boys' clothes. Don't you give her any advice. You aren't the parent. We are. Full stop.
Mm.
And the child sounds to me very confused, the youngest, conflicted,
yeah,
wretchedly unhappy, has now given voice to her suicidal thoughts. She needs help.
Yeah. And she's saying she wants to be a boy.
Yes, and now, this could be gender dysphoria. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm.
These things require professional consultation. These are all the wrong questions.
Yeah.
Is all of this a trend somehow?
Well, you see, that's
where
what kind of
come from.
That's what kind of what leapt out at me. That actually, this question is more about the parents having a difficulty dealing with this because this kind of stuff wasn't around when they were kids, and they're finding it difficult. And perhaps that's the reason why the 21-year-old is interfering more, because she sees her parents having a real difficulty kind of metabolizing all this kind of thing.
You're being so much more kinder than I was.
I'm just back from my holidays. Next week I'll give them hell.
You're in very good form. I'm humbled. All of that could be true.
Mm.
It doesn't change anything. The child needs help.
Yeah.
It's time to contact GP, get a referral to a proper professional who has experience dealing with these sorts of things, and get this sorted. Parents, when your child tells you they want to kill themselves and they've been thinking about it a long time, you need to go for help. You don't need to think it's manipulation, oh, they're just trying to get attention, etc. Let a clinician make those judgments.
Mm.
Always err on the most conservative side.
Yeah, and also as well, the gender dysphoria issue, if it is an issue, I suppose it needs a bit more investigation. But to the person who sent us in the email, this has all come out of left field. But the fact that she's 11 now, she's perhaps heading towards puberty, and it's perhaps become more of a concern to her now that she's going to turn into, you know, a woman, and she doesn't want to turn into a woman, and perhaps that's why they're hearing about it now.
Possibly. Possibly.
No, I'm just speculating here.
Well, that's all we can do in the face of this very, very complex issue. Gender dysphoria often manifests itself quite early in the life of a child, however, in terms of their preferred play objects and their preferred dress-up clothes, etc. That doesn't rule out the fact that it could appear later in life.
Mm.
A lot depends on the context and atmosphere of the family home, and is free communication actually facilitated and encouraged between parent and child? Because very often children are really, really good at copping on to the fact that there are things we just don't talk about in this family. And sexuality and gender identification can be some of them.
Mm.
So it's a very complicated issue. I think the most important thing to do is to get this child to a professional who can sort through some of this, because the possible consequences of asking the wrong questions and hoping that someone will come along and answer them are potentially catastrophic for this child.
Yeah, but this is not a fad. This is not just something they saw on the internet that they're copying.
Far from it.
Yeah, this is real stuff. My four-year-old keeps saying she wishes she wasn't boring. She has a perfectly normal life. The only thing that has changed recently is that now we have a 10-month-old. Personally, I don't think this is a massive issue, as we're conscious to make sure she doesn't feel excluded with the new baby around, especially now the baby is crawling and needs extra attention. The issue, however, is that our daughter's grandmother thinks she needs to go and see a child psychologist to get over this issue. What are your thoughts? This is almost like the other end of the scale here.
You just can't win. You come across this all the time. No, I don't think you need a psychologist for this. Not at all. I think you just sort of downplay it a little bit. Maybe ask a question. What makes you think you're boring? How can you become more exciting if you think you're boring?
Yeah.
Let's play an exciting game. Do something to surprise me. I don't know. I don't know what it means. Children will say the darndest things, won't they? I'm boring at four.
Yeah.
Maybe she is boring.
Well, maybe because it's the 10-month-old, she's probably experience, as a lot of older siblings do, people come in and go, where's the baby? Hi, four-year-old. And so what that means is, like, I wish somebody would look at me and be excited to see me the way they are.
Yeah, that could very well be the case. But whatever, it doesn't need a psychologist. Save your money. Enjoy your child. Try to give her a bit more attention, because inadvertently you may be paying more attention to the new arrival. Of course you would.
Well, if they're crawling, you can't help it. Oh, like, you're chasing them around the house trying to get them not to kill themselves. That's basically what you're trying to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's firefighting, sometimes literally, when they're crawling.
Depending on the child.
Yes. Our just-turned three-year-old started having violent tantrums about 2 months ago. He turns on and off like a switch when he's tantruming. He kicks, hits, pulls hair and bites. We have tried time out the naughty step, talking to him about using gentle hands, etc., but he's getting worse. His older brother had tantrums, but nothing like this. He refuses to eat too, and sometimes he can take over an hour to eat a meal. He also won't sleep longer than 8 hours at night and spends the afternoon exhausted and exhibiting bad behaviour until he passes out. He's wearing us out. Please help.
Gosh, this is Crikey. A child. Ooh, boy, this is a child with a very difficult temperament.
Yeah.
And that, of course, as we've said many times, is sort of the biological basis of your personality. And some children are born very irritable and hard to soothe and very easily stimulated by internal and external stimuli, have extremely low frustration tolerance, and toss these colossal tantrums. This needs some watching and observing over time. There could be triggers that you're not seeing. Very often when we talk about temper tantrums and people say, oh, it comes out of nowhere, it most often comes out of somewhere, an unmet need, a frustration of some kind. Mm. So I'd say observe, and take some careful notes. What methods are you using to try to help this young child overcome these difficulties? Are you using them long enough? One of the things I find with a lot of parents is they find a method, use it for 2 weeks, it doesn't work, and then give up and go on to another method. Mm. 2 weeks mightn't be long enough, Sean.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to stick with it for a month or 6 weeks before the child really begins to modify their own behavior. There could be a lot of possibilities driving this sort of issue. I don't know enough. Please be patient. Make sure you don't get so frustrated and so exacerbated that you're inadvertently sending off I don't like you signals.
Yeah.
Because that can happen very easily. Children that are hard to rear are hard to love. And children that are hard to love quickly know that they're hard to love and become develop a belief system in which they tell themselves, I'm unlovable.
And then they act out.
And then they act out more, and then they get more difficulty, and that proves it to them, and that's a very maladaptive cycle.
Yeah.
So there's a lot at stake here. Watch, observe, find a method that you feel may be successful, and stick with it for at least a month, not just a couple of weeks. Don't be too punitive. Use the old adage, catch them being good. This little fellow can't be bad all of the time.
Yeah.
Just some of the time. Mm. So when he is, in fact, playing nicely, remind him, it's really good, David, to see you having fun like that on your own. Makes mommy feel happy to see you happy. Something like that. Identify and label the behaviors you wish to see more of. Reinforce them verbally or with a pat on the head or a warm smile or some affirmation, and you're likely to get more of them. If we are only drawn into the dark gravity field of the child's difficulty, the child will only exhibit more difficulty. Parent will only become more frustrated, more apoplectic, and perhaps run the risk of rejecting the child just because, oh, he's just a horrible messer and I can't take it anymore. I'm at my wit's end. Children pick up on those signals very, very quickly.
Yeah.
They're to be avoided.
Well, this person says a three-year-old. So, you know, there's two parents in the house, so maybe they can tag team on that, because it's probably very important to be able to take a few minutes away from it.
Yeah, that's really important, actually. That's really important. When you have a parenting partner, you really need to share the parenting. Mm-hmm. And it is a fact that one gets worn down sometimes. That's only human. The rest of life is going on for these adults. You have to give each other support. It can be very, very helpful to say, Well, you go out and see your sister or go shopping, you know, do something, go get a coffee. I'll stay home with the little ones for the next couple of hours. Just go and replenish yourself. That's important.
Yeah.
You cannot expect one parent or one caregiver to do it night and day, week after week, month after month. There's only so much in us that we can give, and then we're depleted and we're running on empty. And that doesn't help.
David Carey still with us for our parenting slot. Next question is about a nine-month-old. Should my baby be crawling at 9 months? He's a big baby, and the doctor said he'd be a little slower learning to move and crawl. He was a little slow sitting up and rolling around and hated being on his tummy for ages. Is he missing a milestone, or is my better half just freaking out for no reason?
Yeah, freak out for no reason, better half. That's definitely it. There are no shoulds when it comes to child development. We have guidelines. Child development is not a ladder that goes in predictable sequences, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Everyone's different. Milestones for some are quite delayed, for some are a little delayed. Some, in fact, are quite advanced. And that's just the way it is. It's not a problem until it really becomes a problem. Nine-month-old crawling at 9 months? Well, yeah, on average, perhaps. But this one isn't. So?
Yeah, it's not a biggie. And
that's not a biggie.
And sometimes they don't crawl, they go straight to walking.
Yeah. Oh, boy, is that true. Sometimes they don't crawl or walk, they go straight to running.
Yeah.
Those are the most difficult ones of all.
Yeah.
The problem with all this developmental milestone stuff is people take it as if it was chipped in granite, which it isn't. There are guidelines and there are sequences of predictable developmental milestones, but it's very fluid and very flexible.
Yeah. Our seven-month-old, seven-month-old daughter, for the last 2 months, she's been waking up screaming and continues to do so until we switch on a light, at which point she stops and starts laughing and smiling and wanting to play, so she's clearly not in pain. She's a very good child, eats very well, and has her naps during the day, goes down for the night about 8 p.m. and sleeps until basically everyone else goes to bed at about 11, and it all kicks off then. Could you be suffering from night terrors, and is there anything we can do about it? She's our fourth child, and we understand all the teething, etc.
Well, these clearly are not night terrors, because she awakens chuckling and chortling and screaming once the light is on. You don't really have to be a rocket scientist here. This is attention getting from mommy or daddy. Light goes on. Guess what? By magic, bang, this loving adult appears in the room, and all is well.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to gradually withdraw that. Maybe use a nightlight. I wonder why she's waking up, though. Is the room too hot? Is it too cold? Are her covers a little bit uncomfortable? Is her cot, if she's in one, a little bit too crowded with lovely, cuddly toys, etc.? Is there noise?
Maybe she's a bit hungry. She's going down for the night at 8 p.m. She's only 7 months old.
I hadn't thought of that. It's been so long since I had one that age.
Yeah, well, I have a seven-month-old, too. And actually, they don't say this on any of the developmental charts. One of the first things I learn, especially girls, is the fake cry, which is exactly what this one's doing. Because mine does, hello. Yeah. You know, that's and as soon as I like you, like when we were on holidays, every time I picked up a book, I only brought one book. I thought, I'll try and read a book. I'd pick up the book, she'd start crying, which is apparently the worst thing. You're supposed to give your children a good example by reading in front of them. This one was going, you're not paying me attention if you're reading a Joseph Fecken Stiglitz. So,
well, look, it's the choice of literature, Sean. For
that's what it is.
Sakes, you know.
Yeah.
Lighten up.
Yeah, it was economics made my daughter cry. That's very tragic.
Well, that's happened to a lot of university students, you can be sure.
She's actually very bright as a button, this one.
Think so. She's certainly learned how to control mommy and daddy.
Yeah. My 14-year-old son has ADHD and dyslexia. He has a support teacher available to him in secondary school. However, he's now refusing help, both at school and at home. His results have all dropped, and in many cases, he's failing subjects. How, as a parent, can I help without it resulting in conflict?
I have the solution for this problem. Number one, it's important to realize that all teenagers can control one thing and one thing only better than their parents: how well they do in school.
Yeah.
You know, I used to tell them when I worked there, they'd come in and they'd say, I failed English, math, science, and history. My parents are killing me. And I would say, you've done it all wrong. You need to pass those things and fail PE and art. It baffles the parents. Look, he has ADHD and dyslexia. He's eligible for support. Mm. The problem with 14-year-olds is they very often don't want those supports and they reject them.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. At that point, when the child rejects and teacher finally throws up their hand, support teacher, and says, I'm not getting anywhere, he won't cooperate, you stop the support. And you simply say to your child, we are here to help you. We'll do anything we can to provide you with the help you need. That's our job as your parents. If you want to go it alone, that's fine. I hope the results work out for you. If it doesn't work out and you start feeling anxious or you start feeling like a failure and you're discouraged, come to us. We'll do what we can.
Mm.
And leave it in their court for a while.
Yeah, I suppose that's all you can do when they're 14, really.
That's about all you can do, really.
They have a will of their own, unfortunately. And this refers back to the previous question that came in for David from the parents, where the 11-year-old was saying she felt suicidal and also she didn't want to be, she wanted to be a boy. Paul says, my son says this, I want to kill myself when he doesn't get his own way and tries to choke himself. He's 7. Should I bring him to a doctor? He's saying this about a year now.
I think yes, of course. A child that tries to choke himself?
Yeah.
That's a serious symptom.
Yeah.
You know, parents, can I just say this? The time to ask for help when you're concerned about your child is when you're concerned about your child.
Yeah.
Not to wait. Don't wait. Don't second guess. Yes, I know it may cost money sometimes. Mm-hmm. You try to go through the HSE for those sort of problems, you'll wait 2 years. But help is available elsewhere. So please go ask for help. Can I just mention, September 5th, I'm doing a talk, Ashfield College, on parenting teenagers.
Okay, good, good. It's smooth plug there.
Very well done.
And actually, it's funny because, you know, what you say there, probably there isn't a parent in the world that hasn't turned up at the emergency department of a hospital because, you know, a baba seemed to have a temperature of 102. And then as soon as you arrive, they make a miraculous recovery and you feel like an idiot, but you still would go again.
Exactly.
But perhaps if it's a psychological issue, people tend to wait.
Too much stigma.
Yeah.
Too much fear. I played that scenario out with both of my daughters, of course. Bring them to the A&E and the doctor looks and says, she's cutting a tooth.
Yeah.
And you feel like the biggest fool on planet Earth, you know? But nonetheless, you did the right thing. And this is the message I want to get across to parents because I think it's so important. When you're concerned, go ask someone.
Yeah.
First port of call and least expensive, quite frankly, is your GP. And GPs are really good. They know child development and they know what's right and what's wrong. They can make mistakes too. They're human beings. If you're concerned, please find a professional and invest the little money it costs because lots of times it's just a quickie consultation and someone will say to you, I do this all the time. There isn't a problem. We don't need to work on anything. Try a couple of these little strategies at home. It should work out. Keep in touch.
Okay, final quickie question for you. Baby's 21 months old. She's very advanced for her age. She can communicate to people with no problem with proper sentences. She's not going to kindergarten at the moment. She's now looked after by the family. We've been told by the public nurse that she's ready for kindergarten. Just wondering, should we send her to creche now or wait next year to go to Montessori?
I don't think it makes much difference, but if you're happy having her at home, keep her at home. There's no need to send a child off to preschool, Montessori, or creche because they appear advanced.
Yeah.
If you can keep them at home, that's probably the preferred option. Now, lots of parents don't have that option, and that doesn't mean they're harmed by being sent off to preschool, creche, or Montessori. Mm. But in this scenario, you don't have to do any of those things. Since you have a loving family and support that embraces her and is keeping her happy, stick with it.
Good stuff. David, thanks a million for coming into us. David Carey, rock a sense as ever. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.